The first eight guys maybe should be blue plate specials, but those back five guys, they should be more like tin hats, more guys that are grunt players, garbage players that dive for the ball.
You are listening to the Scrambled Eggs Podcast on CrackSidewalks.com.
Hi, everyone, and welcome into Scrambled Eggs, your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast here on CrackSidewalks.com. Joe McCann and Phil Bush here with you. Phil, Happy New Year. I guess we're just right on the verge where it's still okay to say Happy New Year. Like, according to Larry David, it's like January 3rd, like three or four days when after that you have to stop with the Happy New Year. So we're still, I think, in that window. So
right. Happy New Year. As long as they listen to it today or tomorrow, Happy New Year, everyone. If not, then I guess Happy President's Day?
Yeah. What's the next thing? I guess Martin Luther King Day in a couple of weeks. But hey, so we're here to talk. Sorry for a bit of a delay in the podcast this week, but you know, life gets in the way sometimes. But we're here to once again talk about Marquette basketball. We're going to hopefully talk you off the ledge after a tough Creighton loss. We both have thoughts on that one. I'm sure many of you will be listening to this on Tuesday, January 4th, and that's when we're going to be talking about the Providence game. That is the next, I have to say it, scheduled game for Marquette basketball against Providence, another home game. Then we got a game against Georgetown on Friday. Phil, let's just jump right into the Creighton game and start with some of the obvious stuff. That was a tough one. It was really frustrating. I don't want to say tournament hopes are gone necessarily because there's a lot of season left, but boy, that felt like a blow, a harsh dose of reality that this team isn't ready for prime time as that game against Creighton slipped away. And obviously the decision not to foul up three is something that had people really getting out the pitchforks on social media on Saturday in the overtime loss to Creighton. What was your takeaway from the L to the Blue Jays?
Yeah, I think it's tough, right? I think that's a game where it was easily within grasp, obviously. Should have won, I'll be honest. You know, it's tough, right? Like, this team is a young team and is going to make young mistakes. You would hope you wouldn't see young mistakes out of, at this point, a quite seasoned coach, right? But I think, regardless of what Shaka said, and we should probably just go to the up three fouling thing right away and circle back to the balance of the game. But, you know, I know Shaka said it was a unique situation. He doesn't like fouling off offside inbounds. I think it was just a mistake by Shaka. I was saying it in real time. I think you and I and everyone in our kind of side chat all were like, uniformly, before it happened, this isn't revisionist history, we have the receipts. We're like, well, we clearly are going to foul up three. And in the moment, the way the play shook out, it was an easy opportunity to foul with very low risk that he jacks up a three and gets three free throws or what have you. So, I think that was just a mistake by Shaka. Hopefully he learns from it. Hopefully he doesn't make that again. That mistake again, but it's a tough heartbreaker to lose that way because there just wasn't anything left in the tank after that shot, it didn't seem.
Yeah, there wasn't. I mean, that just took the wind out of your sails because you had victory assured, really. And yeah, I agree with what you said there. I could not imagine a more obvious situation to foul up three because the play had been stopped. They were reviewing it, so you have a huddle. You have an opportunity to make sure every player is on the same page, and apparently the page they were on was we're not going to foul, which I heard Shaka's reasoning. I just have to respectfully disagree with it.
Correct.
You know, if they go right up, maybe you can back off, but you know, the way the ball was caught, I mean, you had to have like an option in there, like say, well, if they catch it with their back to the basket, hit them and just tackle them, right? Then you got them. Well, whereas if they catch it in motion, maybe then you back off, but it, like you said, the way the play developed, O'Connell caught the ball with his back to the basket and he dribbled. There was a full second or so where Oso could have hacked him and sent him to the line. And I was even saying it was a perfect situation for the perhaps one at time where you might put Oso and Kerr in the game at the same time. Because if you do foul that guy, the only way you lose or at least get it tied is if he makes the first, misses the second, and they get a putback. And the way Kalkbrenner was playing, yeah, maybe he could have gotten a putback. I would have almost understood if Shaka's reasoning was we're afraid of an offensive putback the way they're rebounding the ball. I would have still disagreed with it, but I would have at least understood that explanation a little more. But again, I think it would have been a perfect situation to foul, get Kerr in there, have Kerr and Oso both in there for the rebound, and along with Omax, those are probably your three best rebounders, and Justin. So you have those four guys on the line. I feel pretty good that you get that ball, or at least tap it away so that nobody can get it in the final second or whatever would have been left if he missed the free throw on purpose. So, you know, a lot of people, I saw some people really on Shaka after the game. You know, like I said, I didn't love it. I obviously hated it, but I think you can hate it and still be behind Shaka. Say, look, right. He's a good coach. He made a mistake. He's not a perfect coach. If he was a perfect coach, he would still be at Texas. Maybe even he would have gotten the Carolina job or something better, right? If he was perfect, he would have more Final Fours or whatever. He's a good coach. We like him at Marquette. I think he's a good fit at Marquette, but he has flaws. One of those flaws reared their ugly head on Saturday, a mistake late in the game that I think everybody in that locker room wants back.
I would say this, though, right? Like, we call it a mistake because strategically we don't agree with it, right? Shaka, and I get the numbers, and listen, we're on the same page, right? We would have fouled. It was the perfect situation. Shaka even said, well, I wouldn't have fouled. I wish Oso had guarded harder. You know, there may have been a calculation on Shaka's side that said, hey, look, the strategy here is young team. We're going to be switching on every screen. I'm going to have people on people they're not used to. Like, let's roll the dice with just make sure they don't get a good look. And if they, you know, if they make a bad look, well, you can't defend luck. I don't agree with that strategy, but that doesn't, while it we may think it's a mistake, it doesn't invalidate that strategy. I just don't think it's the right one. But to like bag all of that up into, and I know it's a 4-game losing streak, et cetera, et cetera. I know that we gave up a 5-point lead with a minute to go in overtime. You know, like I get it in the moment, but like we can't package this one choice up amongst everything else and be like, oh my God, the Shaka era is a complete disaster. We're not even halfway through the first season of the Shaka era. I've liked what I've seen so far writ large. This one moment I take in isolation because it stands out from the others as a moment when he was imperfect, as you said.
Yeah. You know, they've lost 4 straight games. I think this is Marquette's first 0-3 start in conference play in a long time, maybe ever, because they weren't in a conference for a long time there.
Right.
I think it's almost certainly their first 0-3 start in the Big East. There have been plenty of 1-2 starts, but I don't think they've actually had an 0-3 start. Normally you get DePaul or somebody early on there, and you can get an early one. But, the 4-game losing streak, you say lost 4 straight, that sounds bad. 3 of them are top 25 teams. You just hate that one got away.
Right. Competitive in all 4 games, right?
Right. Competitive in the games against top 25 teams. And, you know, the thing about the Creighton game, if you still had visions of being a tournament team or you're like just talking about securing an NIT berth, that's one you wanted. You can live with losing to UConn. You can live with losing on the road to Xavier. You could certainly live with losing to UCLA on any floor. But Creighton on your own floor, that's one you wanted, and that's one you should have had. So, regrettable loss for sure. If Marquette misses a postseason by a game or so, that's going to be one where they look back and said, damn, that one cost us. But hope, you know, it may not even come that close one way or the other. Maybe they get to a postseason, like maybe it's the NIT we're talking about at this point. Maybe they're comfortably in the NIT and it doesn't matter. Maybe they're way out of all postseason and it doesn't matter that way. But I think with the margin so thin on this team, I think they may look back in March and regret that one.
For sure.
Quite a bit.
Yes. Yeah. And I was just going to say they're also, we need to talk about the youth, right? Like we saw it at the end of regulation, right? They, you know, Creighton smartly, you know, you can argue whether they should have committed 2 or 3 fouls, whether to go all the way up to the bonus or not. But, you know, Creighton was bleeding clock and fouling so that they could, if necessary, you know, get to the bonus to get the ball back and try and tie the game up. But then coming out of that final foul and that final timeout, clearly we wanted to get the ball to Tyler to work some sort of action with Oso. I mean, that had just been working nonstop in the last 5 minutes of the game. And Creighton came up and threw a different look at Marquette, and the players didn't know how to react to it, right? I given the youth that was on the floor in that possession, that's going to happen. Again, you know, you got to season these teams, season these players. You know, Shaq is in year one of his regime. He's instilling culture. He's instilling strategy. And I think the Creighton was just that, that game is a perfect encompassment of the work that still needs to be done. But you don't throw the baby out with the bathwater and say, man, this team's just never going to be good. And it's like,
right.
If I guess for me, personal opinion, if you can't see the difference in the way the team plays and approaches basketball and the culture in the Shaka era versus the Wojo era, I know we're saying youth now, and we said youth in the Wojo era. These are two different youth excuses.
Some people said this to me on Twitter, like, that just this felt like a Wojo loss, and it did. Like, I mean, everything we hated about the Wojo era, we got on Saturday. We got the sluggish start. We got a really ugly first couple minutes coming out of halftime. We got a late rally that wasn't enough. Although that late rally did give them the lead, so that was a little different, whereas the Wojo rallies always got within one possession and fell short. And then we got a baffling late-game decision that ultimately cost them the game. So we got kind of checked all those boxes, but thing is, this is year one for Shaka. We didn't forgive that after 7 years of Wojo. If we're still getting this after 7 years of Shaka, yeah, I'm sure the MUBB pack will write the Case Against Shaka Smart article. But hopefully it never gets to that. This is a legit youth excuse. And in the Big East, when the margins are so small, you know, a couple mistakes, two or three mistakes, that could cost you the game. And it did on Saturday. And where if you're a more experienced team, maybe that flips the other way. Maybe, you know, if everyone on the roster was 2 years older, Marquette maybe would be 2-1 in Big East play, or 3-0 perhaps in Big East play. But the youth has shown up in these first three Big East games, and that's just something we're going to have to live with this season. And we may have to live with it for a while, because if you look at KenPom, KenPom's got Marquette losing 10 of its next 11.
Yep.
That's a rough one, pal. I hope it doesn't come to that. I hope it doesn't come to that, but that's where they have.
Well, and the other reality is, I mean, Cam Jones wasn't available for the game because of COVID protocols, right? And, you know, fortunately or unfortunately, you know, fortunately from a health standpoint, Marquette did the right thing, right? Based on the latest information from Shaka is the team is either fully vaccinated or, if eligible, boosted, right? So 100% coverage, that's great. But we're still seeing, you know, Daryl Morcel was out for the UConn game. Cam Jones was out for the Creighton game. And while Cam Jones isn't a world beater, you know, maybe you don't have to play 10 minutes of Amari and Ellis. Maybe instead of shooting 26% from three, we shoot 29% from three with Cam Jones in. You know, the bench is a little deeper, you know, et cetera. Maybe Cam gets a hot hand. So I think the thing that would concern me long term is, does this kind of slow leakage of COVID sits? You know, you'd almost rather want this all at once than, you know, go lick each other's plates, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You'd almost rather have a game postponed when you've got four or five guys out, as opposed to losing one player every week. Hopefully that doesn't continue. Where Marquette's missing one guy, we have one COVID DNP every week, hopefully, or every game. Hopefully that doesn't go that way. But yeah, I mean, the bottom, Marquette was not at full strength. And to your point, Cam Jones is not like a guy, like the top player on the team, or a guy who like drastically is going to affect what maybe the betting market expects Marquette to do, but he is one piece that you are used to having that you didn't have. And maybe a shot here or a shot there, or a couple extra minutes of rest for one player here or there. Maybe that makes a difference in a game that came down to the buzzer twice. So, yeah, maybe it makes a difference. And the small margin of error, because I think a lot of these teams in the Big East, I mean, maybe even, you could almost say 1-11. They're jumbled up that close.
Right.
It could be that tight. I mean, the teams that I thought would be at the top, Villanova maybe is back to the pack a little bit. Georgetown is actually a slight favorite according to KenPom on Friday, and I think they're clearly number 11, but capable of beating Marquette, of course. So it's a nervous week for me, Phil, because I think, you know, I've kind of backed off talking about the tournament until this team gets a winning streak going, because I don't think it's a realistic goal right now. I think it's more about let's be a 500 team and hopefully qualify for the NIT. But this is a very critical week to do that, next 8 days, because Providence at home, Georgetown on the road, DePaul at home. If you want to be relevant, I think you got to win all three, to be perfectly honest. At least two out of three. Because after that, again, KenPom projects Marquette losing the next nine in a row after that. Or eight in a row. Yeah, but anyway, a lot of losses coming, if you're asking KenPom. So now is the time to turn a corner. And I kind of sound like Shaka here, but I don't know what to tell you.
Right.
Because he made me laugh in that, I don't know if you saw the huddle during the
Creighton
game.
I did not.
Game.
I was at the game.
Like when they were, basically they were missing shots early on, and they had that, you know, live look in the huddle, and Shaka essentially said, you know, guys, we got to do this on the defensive end, and down there, talking about offense, goes, I don't know what to tell you, but we got to finish. Essentially saying, guys, I don't know what to tell you, but we just got to make shots.
Right.
Like, you're just missing too damn much. So hopefully all those misses at the rim kind of stop. Maybe a bit of a regression to the mean there, and a few more of those layups fall, because I think Marquette is doing a better job of getting those high percentage shots. Paint Touches had a nice thread on Twitter on that on Monday, if you have a chance to go back and check it out, talking about how it seems that they have emphasized creating more high percentage two-point shots as opposed to just chucking it from three, which we talked about that a couple weeks ago on the pod, Phil. Seems to be the right direction for a team that's shooting about 31% from three.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the one thing is they're definitely creating more two-point shots, which is good, right? Because quite frankly, we're just not good at three-point shots. I mean, Tyler Kolick went 1 of 6. You know, Justin Lewis went 1 of 4 against Creighton. That's not going to get it done. So getting more two-point possessions is very important. And I think, you know, maybe mid-range jumpers are this team's efficiency point, which, you know, is a bit contrary to most analytics. But maybe they're just better at mid-range than they are at any other shot. But the one thing that does concern me is to your point around they're just not finishing at the rim. They're also not generating fouls. We only took 7 foul free throw shots in the game against Creighton. They are just, and this is not a, you know, the refs aren't calling it. I think the refs have been fine, right? There's no concern there. It's Marquette is not generating fouls for the other team. I don't know if it's a lack of, you know, going up hard. I think I've seen this in previous teams. I remember one season in a buzz year where, like, they were just afraid to get contact at the rim and were kind of, you know, throwing up bank shots and hook shots and whatever. And it's like, sometimes you got to lean into the contact and you know, and not only are you going to get the basket, but you're going to get the foul. But that there seems to be some of that going on where they're just not comfortable with the contact at the rim.
Yeah, I'd agree with you, because I have to watch the games again, but I don't recall many instances in recent games where I was thinking like Marquette was getting hacked and it just wasn't getting called.
Right.
Like it was just brutal. Like, yeah, I mean, maybe there's a call here or there that you would have liked, but I just don't remember thinking, oh, they're just getting hacked and it's ridiculous and they're not getting these calls. I think when, you know, a lot of their two-point shots are, you know, maybe shying away from contact or maybe just the pull-up jumpers, which are fine if they're going in, but you're not getting fouled on those pull-up jumpers, more likely
right.
than not. So, but again, if you're not good at finishing at the rim, especially if you're a smaller guy, maybe going into that contact probably isn't a good idea because you're probably just going to get your shot rejected. We saw that quite a bit against Creighton, right? I mean, Kalkbrenner had quite a few blocks of guys just trying to get in there and just get a shot up over him, and they didn't get any contact, and he just sent it the other direction.
Yep.
So I don't know what the answer is there. But, if there's a way to generate more fouls, great. I don't know how exactly you're going to do it, but, you know. We're just two guys in a podcast.
Yeah. I just think they need to go into the body more, right? Like, I'm going to pick on Tyler Kolick a little bit, and it's easy for me to say because I was in the arena on Saturday and I was watching live. But you know, there was a couple attempts on the basket that near where I sit, where you could, you know, he went and he laid it up, but he had to lay it, you know, highly technical description here. He had to lay it up like 6 inches off the square on the backboard, right? Like to the left of the square, to the right of the square. And it's like, that's not going to go in. Like, so get in closer and take the contact. And it just seems like, you know, Tyler especially, but a lot of the players just are leaning away from the contact, and it results in bad shots and no fouls, right? Like, I think we just need to, you know, Shaka needs to sit the team down and say, look, if you get blocked, you get blocked, but get into them and like put up a shot that's going off the square. And if you're not hitting the square on the backboard, then it's not a good quality layup. And you know, maybe there's one of his spicy, you know, gold versus red analytics he can put together around this. But yeah, they just need to generate more contact, I think.
Yeah. But going back to what the paint touches thread, I think that is an encouraging sign of at least a willingness to adjust.
Correct.
Right? And realize something that's not working. Say, look, we are just not a team that should be hacked, you know, hoisting up 33s a game. We're just not that good at it. So let's find a way to get in the paint. And I think Kolek is good at creating for the big guys. And what did Oso have, a career high
22? 22, 10 of
22 12. In that Creighton game? Yeah, I mean, that is a great sign and a great game for Oso. And you know, there will be games where Kerr has maybe not 20, but, you know, a similarly efficient output from the center spot. But, you know, between those two guys, I've said before, you got 10 fouls and 40 minutes to work with those two guys. And I think Kolek does a good job getting both of those guys opportunities. So, like that a lot. There are adjustments being made. They came up short on Saturday. We all hated the loss, but we're all going to get over it because they got games coming up where maybe you can make up for it a little bit. Yeah, does winning three in a row sound optimistic? Yeah, probably does. Is it realistic? I really think it is,
yeah.
Phil. I really think that they could win three in a row. And now this Providence team, they're playing on Tuesday. I got to say, they're red hot. Like, you got to give it to them. Even if you think they're overrated, fine. But they've been playing incredibly well. And it's a game at home, though. But similar to Creighton, where, like, they have a pretty good record. They've been playing well lately. I think it's a game having them at home where the analytics are close enough, predictive metrics are close enough that you say it's a winnable game. KenPom only has this as a one-point spread in Providence favor. That dipped the other way after the Creighton loss. I think Marquette was actually favored before the Creighton loss. So as well as Providence has been playing, I will grant that they are deservedly favored, and I can understand if you're expecting Providence to win this game. This is absolutely a winnable game for Marquette. A chance to maybe shake the bad taste, you know, get the bad taste out of your mouth after that great loss.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, Marquette and Providence, have negative images of each other from a conference record standpoint, right? Providence 3-0, Marquette's 0-3. Marquette's had a couple of players had to sit out as the result of COVID, so maybe hamstring them a little bit in a couple of their losses. Whereas Providence benefited, the two toughest teams they've played so far, Seton Hall and Connecticut, were both without players either due to COVID or injuries, key players, right? So that's not to take away from Providence, you know, in the fact that Providence is playing well. But, you know, I don't think this is the absolute, like, oh man, Providence is just clearly better than Marquette type of scenario, right? I think Marquette can certainly hang and probably, I'll go as far as to say, probably should win this game, right? I know the analytics don't favor Marquette, but I think just stylistically, matchups, bench depth, everything that they've got going on, I think Marquette is the better team than Providence. Providence has just been playing better of late, and if the Providence that's been playing well the last week or two shows up, and the Marquette that starts out slow shows up, that's going to be a problem.
Mm-hmm. The obvious statement of the day, you got to make
right.
shots. If you're going to win game. If you're not making shots, if you go in long stretches, 5, 6, 7 minutes with zero field goals, tough to win games when you do that, especially in the Big East where the talent level is going to be pretty close on most nights. So, looking at Providence's numbers on the year, defense is top 40 in the nation, offense is top 50 in the nation. They actually get to the free throw line a lot, top 10 in the country at getting to the free throw line, and top 50 in the country at keeping their opponents off the free throw line. Effective field goal percentage on defense is top 30 in the country. So this is a pretty good defensive team, top 25 in the country at two-point percentage defense. Nate Watson was a guy I think who was preseason All-Big East.
Yes, he was.
Correctly. So he'll be a problem in the middle in this game. It'll be a tough matchup, so you got to. I mean, you'll be throwing Oso and Kerr both at him, and he'll probably play the lion's share of the minutes for them, whereas it might be more equally distributed on the Marquette side in the middle. But I agree with you. I think, I don't know if I would say should win, but gosh, you really think they can win this one. Because Providence is at that point, you feel like they're just due for a loss, right? Like, as well as they've been playing, are they going to get to 14, 15, 16, and 1 before they drop another one? You got to feel like another L is coming for Providence in a home game in Milwaukee on Tuesday. Maybe a good opportunity to make that happen. So what's the tipping point for you in this game, Phil, if Marquette's going to knock off the Friday?
Well, I think the Marquette's going to have to, generate more turnovers than Providence has in, of late. Providence has been protecting the ball pretty well. And like you said, it's as simple as, I don't know what to tell you, we just got to make more shots.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know what else to add beyond that. We just got to outscore. Right. Should that be my take my money this week? Score more points than Providence?
If you score more points than Providence, you can take my money. I mean, the shot selection is right. It's good, right? And it's, you know, like you mentioned with Paint Touch's Twitter thread, it's evolving in a direction that's more likely to result in made baskets. But we've got to make those baskets, right? The selection is good. The execution, less so. So let's, if they can execute just a little bit better, I think they're in good shape for Tuesday.
I think so too. So we'll try to be optimistic on that one. Then the next game after that, I know we're kind of rushing through it today. We're a little short on time today, folks. So hey, maybe a shorter podcast is better for your time too. Just, you can get on to the next true crime podcast or whatever you got to get through to move through your day. Next game would be Friday against Georgetown. This one's on the road. We said last week, Phil, and I think you and I both agreed, although at the time we had recorded the last pod, Marquette was favored to on KenPom to win three of the next four, and the only predicted loss was at Georgetown. But I think Georgetown is the most likely win in that
stretch.
Oh,
I agree.
Because Georgetown, just they're just not that good. Capable of beating Marquette, of course. They've had a lull. I guess Georgetown must have had a COVID issue. They haven't had a game since December 18th.
Yep,
they have no games.
Multiple games canceled due to COVID.
Yes, this, who knows? This game may not even happen if Georgetown's COVID issues aren't, because it looks like they don't have any games scheduled between the time we're recording this podcast and the Marquette game on Friday. So, yeah, you know, the big thing with Georgetown is they're kind of a one-man team, to be perfectly honest with you. Well, maybe I take that back a little bit, because they have a couple guys who can shoot, but because that Caden Rice is a volume shooter. He's the guy, he's taken 101 threes already on the year and hitting at 42%. So that's a guy, I've looked at box scores and seen him like 0 for 8 or like 0 for 9 from 3 in some games, but I've also seen games where he like hit like 7 or 8, 9 threes. So that's a guy who I think could be a tipping point where, it, like, if Caden Rice is hot and is bearing like threes, hitting like 6, 7, or 8 threes in a game, that could be a problem, because if Marquette's not hitting enough threes to catch up, maybe you get away from me. But when I said one-man team, the guy I was thinking about was, of course, was Amini Muhammad, a five-star prospect who Georgetown somehow got a commitment from. But he is a guy who
should we call him future Georgetown transfer Amu Muhammad?
Any good player Georgetown has ever had has transferred. If Patrick Ewing would have been able to keep every good young player he's ever had, Georgetown might be a top five team in the Big East right now. Like, if he would have been able to keep Akinjo and Mac McClung and who's the big guy I'm thinking of? Hovan. Or who was the big guy they had last year who transferred on them? Jesse, I can't think of
I know name. Who you're talking about, yeah.
But the big guy they had last year who, Wahab, that's who I was thinking of. Wahab was the big guy they had who left the team last year. Like, all these good players who just keep leaving the program. It's got to be so frustrating for Georgetown fans. But, if Patrick Ewing could have kept them all together, he'd have an incredible squad right now. But he doesn't have them. And that's why Georgetown is currently 6-5, picked to finish last in the Big East. But Georgetown is looking at this game. It's like, hey, this struggling Marquette team is coming in here. We got to get these guys and make sure we don't finish 11th. Because, you know, I don't know. I know you and I don't see Marquette as a team that could finish 11th, but I think some other teams do. And Georgetown is looking like, hey, if we're going to finish 10th, one of the teams we could finish ahead of has got to be DePaul, and maybe another is Marquette. So Georgetown is looking at this as an opportunity to kind of get right, to kind of get, you know, off to 1-0 start in the Big East. It would be for them because this is their first Big East game. But, you know, to me, if you can stop those two guards, you know, I think, you know, Amini Mohammed, that's your guy, Daryl Marcel. Mm-hmm. Daryl Marcel, that's his assignment. And just hope Caden Rice doesn't get red hot from three. So you got to have a body on him on the perimeter. If you could slow down those two guys, I think you could beat Georgetown handily. That's really all the extent of my analysis of the Georgetown game.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting. I mean, quite frankly, there's not a lot of tape right on Georgetown, right? They've played some games, but they haven't played in a while. I don't know with their COVID restrictions what type of practicing they're doing. You know, are they making adjustments, or do they have an opportunity to take this layoff and kind of remake and remodel what they're doing? So, I mean, there is an eventuality where, like, Georgetown comes out, they're rested, refreshed, they've got a new approach, and boom, they come out and blitz Marquette. Is that a possibility? Absolutely. I've seen, you know, I've got scars from the Wojo era, right? How many Georgetown games should have been won wins for Marquette that weren't? You know, so I get that, but I think you're spot on. If you stop at least one of those two, if not both, then, you know, as long as Marquette's offense can be average, Marquette can outscore Georgetown, right? But
yeah, like, you may not even need to like stop them, just
limit
like
them.
Contain them so they don't go off for 30, right? You know, if Muhammad gets you 25 and Rice gets you 20 something, you might be in trouble. But if you can at least just contain him a little bit, I didn't mention Donald Carey. He's actually shooting pretty well from three on the year as well. He's shooting 47% on the year. So they've got three guys shooting 39% or better or four guys, I guess. Well, one guy's only attempted nine threes. But the point is, Georgetown's 3-point percentage is top 12 in the country. They're 39.2% as a team. So they can. That's the only thing that makes me nervous about this game, is that if Marquette goes into one of those stretches where they're 5, 6, 7 minutes without a field goal and Georgetown is burying threes in that time, yeah, I would be nervous about this game. That's kind of like my thing where I'm looking at this game. It's just like, don't let them bury you from three.
Right.
Just defend the perimeter and look, if they get into the paint, and let's just hope, you know, Oso and Kerr can do their thing in the paint, and I think you can defend Georgetown and it not get away from you. So I certainly a winnable game.
Well, and Georgetown likes to boot the ball around. Like, they are extremely turnover prone for a high level team. So not that Marquette is exceptional at generating turnovers, but I mean that should be a weakness to exploit. And, you know, and we should be able to speed them up and get them out of their offense a little bit. So again, is there a possibility that Georgetown wins? Potentially. But I just don't see it as the 50-50 toss-up that KenPom does. I tend to lean on the analytics, but in this case, I think they're wrong. I think this should be at least a 60-40, you know, Marquette is going to win type of record.
Especially if Georgetown is coming off a COVID pause, where I don't know how much they've even been able to practice.
Right.
I think we saw quite a bit last year. Teams coming off COVID hiatuses looked rough.
Right.
I think that was like one of the few games Baylor lost last year. I think that was the only game Baylor lost last year, was their first game after COVID, if I remember correctly. So, yeah, if Georgetown's coming off a pause and they haven't been able to practice very much, that's advantage Marquette. So if this game is played, it hasn't been canceled yet, that certainly windows open for Marquette to get a road win. And I think it's, you know, this is me getting probably too optimistic, but I think this is an opportunity to get two wins this week. And that's what I'm going to predict. I think they are going to beat Providence, and I think they're going to beat Georgetown on the road, assuming both these games are played. The Providence is going to be a grind, but I think this team's got to show its mettle, show its learn from its mistakes in the past. And I think they're both on the table for me. So for them. So I'm saying two wins this week. Let's turn those frowns upside down. Let's get it.
Yeah, I agree. I think we'll see two wins. Maybe they won't be totally pretty, but I think we'll see two wins. And I'll be curious to see what the crowd is for the Providence game, because in the Creighton game, it was one of these small but mighty, especially in the second half. The game was certainly not as well attended as you would like. Now, we still had, probably 10,000 fans in the stand, which compared to some, that's a sellout for some teams in the Big East. But yeah, I'm going to be curious to see what the attendance is for Tuesday's game now that it's not, not New Year's Day and I don't know, maybe people feel better about COVID. I don't know. But we'll see what attendance looks like on Tuesday, because I think that'll have an impact, because Providence has not played a ton of road games. So I think that'll be an impact if the crowd's in it.
Again, we're probably keeping it kind of a short podcast today because both Phil and I are kind of on some time crunches this week. So quick take my money update. We did have our fifth hit this past week, a rare 32 deflection game that was a loss. I think Shaka said at the beginning of the year his teams were like something 101 when they had 32 deflections. And this was a game that it wasn't that they got 32 deflections in that second overtime. They had 32 in regulation. So I don't know what the final number was, but they might have.
When I left the stadium, it was 42. Or the last time they updated the stadium, it was 42.
Yeah, so a bunch of deflection in that game. So they hit the mark in the last game. So that's five hits on the year if you're keeping track for Take My Money. So if the Providence game, Phil, what do you like in this one? I might just go with the 32 deflections again, because I think it's a good formula, and you just got to disrupt Providence. Providence is great at getting to the free throw line. Any other suggestions for you for the Providence?
No, I like that one because there's no way that something that's like 110-2 goes two games in a row by hitting without a win, right? Like I think the 32 lines up with the win prediction, and I think that's gonna how they're gonna have to get there, right?
Yeah. For the Georgetown game, I'm gonna say this: Georgetown hits a lot of threes. Mm-hmm. So I'm just going to say fewer than 10 three-point makes for Georgetown. Because it seems like in some of their games they do get up, some of their better games they get up over 10. Let's see, they've gotten more than 10 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 times this year, and they've won four of those. In every game they've – there was one game they lost against St. Joe's where they hit 11 and they still lost. So I'm just going to say limit the three-point shots for Georgetown. I'm going to say nine or fewer. So I guess the number's 9.5. So 9.5 is an over-under for and hit the under for Georgetown three.
I like it.
Just can't let them get hot.
I like it. I like it. That's going to be crucial.
All right. So we're going to wrap this one up. Again, kind of a shortened one today. We maybe get to a lengthier one next week. Hopefully we have some good things to talk about in next week's pod. Hopefully two wins, but we'll see. Again, hopefully these games are played. You can hit us up on Twitter. I'm Joe McCann 3. Phil is MOOOF23 at Crack Sidewalks. It's a team handle. You can go to cracksidewalks.com. We post the podcast there. You can leave comments on the .com. You can also rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. We have a Scrambled Eggs Facebook page as well. Phil, have a great week. I know you are now out of the cone of silence on Spider-Man, so you're all cut up on your MCU stuff. So hopefully you have a great week in that regard, that you can just, unmute all the words you've had muted and you're like in a spoiler free.
Yeah, I'm in the unfettered territory. Anything and everything you want to talk about, I'm more than happy to talk about.
All right, very good. Everybody have a good week. Stay safe out there. Seashells and balloons.